Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started.
Welcome, everyone, to our segment today. I am so excited to be here with a special guest. My name is Emma Ito, pronouns she, her, hers. And I am here to talk with a very special guest about libraries today. Forrest, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, I'm Forrest, our favorite librarian. She, her, they're, them. It's wonderful to have you all. And thank you for having me a part of this conversation. Welcomes from Georgia.
Yay. I love that we're coming at you from the South, both of us. So representing from there. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about today about what you do, Forrest, and kind of our jobs within the library and the difference between libraries and archives and just like things like that. So would you tell me a little bit about what you do and what kind of library you work in?
Yes. So I'm a reference librarian at the Auburn Avenue Research Library on African American Culture and History. We are one of three special research libraries in the country solely dedicated to African American literature, culture, history, and excellence. We occupy a 50,000 square foot building in the heart of the Sweet Auburn District, which is also known as one of the country's Black Wall Streets, an area of Black Mecca of entrepreneurship, and specific beginnings. And my library actually has not only reference and research services, which I primarily work within, but also our archives services. And also that's complemented with our programming. We do a lot of in-house programming with collaborative partners in our community and also throughout the state and country. And since COVID, we've been able to truly expand our reach with our patronage. So it's a great opportunity just to be in conversation with you and just to see the similarities of each of our institutions that we work with.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Forrest. So just a little bit of background on, I'm actually transitioning right now to a new job, but I worked at a state library, state archive for 4 years in Virginia. And it's really interesting because Forrest and I were talking a little bit before we started recording about how similar some of the pieces in our institutions are and also how different. So a little bit more, and Forrest, did you want to talk a little bit about what is the difference between a library and an archive as we keep saying archives?
Oh, yes. So the difference between a library and an archive is that a library's specific job is to preserve and also circulate specific historical information that may not be easily accessible in a public library or academic setting. Not saying that academic libraries, public or even special collections do not have a historic or heritage collection that is similar to an archive, but yet a public library academic mostly houses reference resources, ready reference, things of that sort to support the needs of patrons, whether it be academic research, genealogical. Now, there are other institutional organizations and spaces like historical societies, small collections in certain private institutions and archives that also provide similar services to archives, like Heritage Work in Suwanee, Georgia, which is a private archives firm that houses special collections and papers and specific materials for certain collections like spandex and Adidas and others. So you truly are able to see how library science is essential to not only preserving history for businesses, but completing a story. So others are able to see not only how entrepreneur beginnings and journeys develop, but also how a company or an individual, similar to my library, a special research library, houses presidential papers or collections like Zamblinobia, which is a Black lesbian organizing organization that administers the Audre Lorde Foundation or the Hosea Williams collection and papers. So it truly depends on the institution and also the collection that they maintain. You know, remember, a collection reflects its community. And so that's how we're also able to see to whom we are servicing effortlessly.
I love that so much because, Forrest, we were talking a little bit earlier about how you got your MLS, and so you're a librarian, and I did not get my MLS. I'm not a librarian, but I did work in a library archives, and I have a master's in history. And we talked a little bit about how interlocking those two pieces are. And especially mm-hmm. when you were just talking about like sharing history and telling stories. So I'm a little interested in, you know, what made you want to become a librarian yeah. as we talk about this and what kind of like path is it? Like if someone's listening and they're like, I have thought Ooh. About becoming a librarian or I've thought about working in archives, like what kind of path did you take?
Mm. Well, a library has always been a second home for me. It's truly a neutral learning environment. And I attended in my undergraduate a historically Black college, Fort Bliss State University. And from that experience, I learned that without a proper circulation of information, those around me cannot make informed decisions, and they do not have an access to information that helps them to arrive to plausible conclusions, not based upon projected implicit bias based upon a lack of access or information about a specific community, primarily people of color. And so I knew instantly that I wanted to work with research. And I, as an undergraduate, I was pursuing my Bachelor's of Arts in English Literature with a minor and concentration in classics. And so I knew, how can I utilize my strengths? I love reading, I love history, and I love helping and also empowering others around me with information. So I, like many English Lit graduates, I struggled between law school, obtaining my master's in history, or library science. And when I outweighed them, it truly just called my name. And I actually worked in a museum throughout my graduate career. I was a curatorial assistant at the Tubman African American Museum in Macon, Georgia. They're one of the largest Black and African folk art museums. And I enjoyed them specifically because they're in the South. And, you know, one bit of advice that I provide anyone under the sound of my voice is that when you're presuming, or you are in library school, imagine and envision the patrons you want to work with, and that will reflect the community and the collection you will be working with and maintaining. And I knew I wanted to work primarily and solely with people of color. And I wanted to provide not only a neutral learning environment, but cultivate a safe space. I wholeheartedly believe, and this is through my pursuit of my MLIS, is that the same pursuit and mythology for your mental health, you also conduct for academic research, and that the work you need to cultivate and conduct can be done individually, but there are professionals like mental health professionals. In the solicit world, there are librarians, historians that can redefine your route and also pursuit of great information that can move you forward to your most elevated highest self. And that's all what information does. It helps us to elevate to our highest self. And so after I earned my MLIS, I felt as though I could hit the ground running. So I transitioned from the University of Alabama, where I earned my MLIS, roll tie, chance. And I transitioned to Georgia, back to my home state. And I knew exactly the institutions that I wanted to work with, either minority serving or specifically in a special collections. And I actually worked upon leaving the Tubman African American Museum as a curatorial assistant into television. Similar to what we were talking about, history, research, archives, and library science have similar skills. There's a thread of common skills that are refined through the foundation and cornerstone of pursuing your MLIS, your master's in history, or even any other similar discipline. And I was able to work in their video archives and work with their metadata. And from there, I was able to see not only how my experience with the digital repository when I worked at an academic library at the institution of Columbus State University, but I was also able to utilize those skills from previously working in archives, working in an academic library with a digital repository, to now working in a video archives, handling and also clarifying metadata. So I was able to gain new skills, but also refine the ones I already had and were part of my repertoire of strengths. And so when I was able to truly see, okay, I've gained a wealth of information, a wealth of experience, how can I apply this as a resource for my community? And that's when I transitioned into the institution I'm at now, a special research library, a part of Atlanta Fulton Public Library System, the Auburn Avenue Research Library.
That's amazing. Thank you, Forrest. It makes me think a lot of, like, especially as you moved through digital archives, like, how have you seen archives change, and how are we keeping stories now, and how are we getting them out to people?
Oh man, I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, one, I believe, of a point to prioritize within archives is promotion. You know, if you do not promote it, they do not come, or unbeknownst to them, know it exists. And one of the most common ways to snub history is by not circulating it. Circulation is currency in an archives, a library, and in a museum. You know, we truly depend upon the feedback and also how information, whether it be visual, literary, or of a historical sense, are the oral history. And one thing that I've learned and seen as we evolve is that digitalization is the next wave for all information in library spaces. And we're moving away slowly from physical resources, which is important because we must also preserve them in the state they are, and also allow them to be able to be a point of access for others. Open access is important. And I believe that this is important to empower patrons so they can explore, they can discover, and they can also refine their independence, utilizing these resources at home and then in the library, just to show that not only as a scholar, they're gaining certain in specific research skills, but that they're able to also evolve with a library that is not only a neutral learning environment, but we're also handling bittersweet information. Often at times this information creates and paints a picture of history that illustrates narratives that were not always on the right or the greatest side of history. But again, that's for patrons to arrive to. And luckily, with such a wealth of information, they can effortlessly.
That's definitely something that I've seen in my work in the historical institution. And I think a question I think a lot of is, you know, who is telling this story? And so I love that you brought up the digitization and aspect, because I feel like, especially with oral histories and how those are recorded and used, people can tell their own stories in whatever language they want to. So it's definitely that shift from, you know, personal papers that we'd see on like letters, right? Or now like we have collections like email collections, right? So it's definitely shifting, and I think for hopefully a good shift.
Oh yes, even in my archives we have a board game collection as yes, and we also have a funeral program collection which digitalizes all funeral and rites and burial passing of people of color in the metropolitan area. So it truly is to assist those conducting personal research as far as genealogical research, but also trying to piece together history of their community.
Yeah. I mean, the best stories I feel like we find are these different pieces that you find in the archives, right? So if you have collections like that, or like, for example, we have collections now of yearbooks and of Bible collections, like people would write their genealogies and their family trees in the front of their Bibles. And so like all of those different pieces are what help create a story and help like tell someone's story, or that you find someone genealogically that can tell their own story. So yeah. I think that's just really neat. My inner history nerds like really nerding out. Yes, that's so awesome.
I find some of my greatest and best friends in the library, actually. Most of the friends that I have cherished in the longest relationships, actually, we develop are met in the library or museum. So stick around, friends. Nerds in the greatest places.
Definitely. Well, it kind of goes back to what you were saying about libraries as safe spaces. And I think that's something that's really important, because they are these community spaces. Did you want to talk a little bit about what you think about that?
Oh, yes. Libraries are a neutral learning environment and space, simply because through the guise and the cloak of confidentiality, you're able to explore your interests based upon your strengths. And there are professionals there that can assist you. They can empower you, not enable you. And what I've learned, you know, traditional librarianship often at times perpetuates and circulates this gatekeeper trope. But what I've seen now with a lot of people of color and millennial entrepreneurship, and those that are evolving with certain rhetoric that's circulated within our professional organizations like the ALA, the BCALA, and certain small communities within and circles, is that we're moving from a gatekeeper trope to a key maker. We are empowering those around us so that way they come back into the library with more refined independence and a greater confidence to move and to converse about subjects that they primarily felt were difficult to navigate. And, you know, that's what I believe in. Not only is it similar to your mental health work, but academic research can help you to elevate to your highest self. Whether you're not a great communicator or a great orator or even a great writer, you can explore that, you can define that, and you can strengthen those skills that you need to prioritize best. And so it's important that libraries, and I also have to mention archives and museums, are neutral learning environments. You can go there to not only decompress, you can go there to discover, you can go there to empower, and also to find like-minded communities. There's a community in a book. And truly, I believe you're never alone if you're in a library or museum. Even if you do not engage others, you're still being stimulated and also satisfied in so many ways upon you exploring who you are and what's around you.
I love that so much because it makes me think of, you know, hopefully as you all are listening, Forrest is kind of demystifying this idea of an archive, right? It's like, I never entered an archive until I was in my master's in history program. And I was very intimidated. Like, really? You know, it didn't feel like at first, like, was I allowed to be there? And I think sometimes you can feel that in certain museums or institutions, but, or like, is my story in these walls, in these collections? And one of the things I discovered is like, sometimes you have to be the person to find it. But when you do, it's, your story is in there. And like, it's just incredible when you're handling, especially documents that, like, I specifically study and look into Asian American history in Virginia. And, you know, there's definitely been people who have told me like, oh, you won't find anything. There weren't Asian immigrants in Virginia historically. And like, there actually is a lot of history. And I found like a lot of documents in the archives I was looking in. And it's pretty incredible when you're sitting there like touching, you know, a document that a naturalization, for example, a naturalization record of an Asian immigrant who had come here in the early 1900s, you know? So I think it's so different when you're really in there too. And that like, it is a safe space. And I think some of that was in my head of like, I felt intimidated, but I didn't need to, especially when there are reference archivists like you, Forrest, who are there to, you want to help, right? Like, you're nice. Really nice. It's not a scary place.
It's not. You know, also it's important, and just to piggyback off what you said, is to be seen and heard in these spaces, whether it's on the shelf or with a professional. That experience makes you want to come back in because it validates not only your interest, but what you discover is that relation to seeing not only a reflection of you in the stacks, in the collection. It's like, I can contribute to this also history in some way through the work I do.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things I like too that a lot of libraries do, and I don't know that everyone's always aware of, is that there's a lot of outreach and programming for not just K-12, but like college students, teachers, lifelong learners, anyone. So did you want to talk a little bit about kind of where you see that?
Oh, yeah. So my library, we do a great deal of outreach from our book talks, our virtual story times, to our embedded librarianship. You know, specifically, my niche of research is Southern history's LGBTQ+. IA narratives, as well as Gullah Geechee history. And so I provide a great deal of reference research and services to higher education. So for example, I support many middle grades curriculum for our Georgia State partnership, which is a large public institution, as well as Georgia has many HBCUs, historically Black college and universities, from Spelman to Morehouse to Clark Atlantic to Fort Valley State University, Savannah State, Auburn University, Albany State University, excuse me. I'm thinking about my rivals, Auburn University. But we're able to truly assist them, and we collaborate. You know, collaboration is the key theme in outreach. Collaborate and maintain a system of communication. communication with these partners, because you never know when you may need to support each other in other avenues outside of your initial collaboration or initial project that you worked on. And so, for example, my institution has continuously worked with GPB for film premieres as well as film discussions. We also house and administer the Gullah Geechee Film Festival. The month of October is Gullah Geechee History Observation Month. And so my library, in a way to circulate that history, we host a film festival. And you would be surprised at how many people, their reviews are, I never knew this community existed. I never knew they were geologically isolated. And so just having that point of information allows others to feel more vulnerable to not just to explore and to express certain ignorances, but letting others know I was unaware. And it's okay to discuss that. Meeting those where they are is a beautiful thing, but also empowering them to elevate from where they are is also an enlightening thing.
Wow, I could not have put that any better. That's like so beautifully said, Forrest. Thank you. It just has me thinking a lot too about, you know, libraries and institutions and archives, they really are interacting with the community. I mean, they're a piece of the community and really connected within their communities. I mean, there's a lot of libraries. The institution that I was at actually had a small exhibition space, and we actually had multiple traveling exhibitions that go around the state of Virginia to public libraries that are historically based. And I love that when you were talking earlier before we started recording about you have multiple exhibition spaces, which is really cool. Did you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So my library, we have three exhibition space. Our largest was named after our historic Catalyst for Change in McFadders, our McFadders Gallery, which primarily exhibits our mixed medium collections. Our second, which is our children's collection, which highlights the roots of raps exhibition, The Art of Frank Morrison, to whom is a beautiful children's illustrator, and it highlights the beginning and history of rap and hip hop in the origin of New York. And then our smallest collection, which is entitled The Small Gallery, primarily highlights our photography collection. Currently, we're exhibiting our Silver Living Legacies Extraordinaires. It is by Sistography, which is a Black and Brown female-led photography troupe, which highlights and illustrates notable Black and Brown women in the metropolitan Atlanta area. The collection that we are exhibiting in our small gallery is primarily a Black and white in sepia, truly to illustrate the different colors and hues of Black and Brown women. And that is not necessarily seen through the perpetuated and stereotypical colorist lens or in a hierarchy of understanding to what's more valuable or palatable, but that all these women are beautiful regardless of their hue. They're still a Black or Brown beautiful woman. And so I just love those art spaces, because visual information is just as important as literal information. And that wealth of history is still a circulation. And so having those different experiences in the library truly provides a well-rounded, fruitful experience for any patron. So when people come into my special research library, they not only explore two art galleries before even entering our reference area, where we have a large collection, and then our third and fourth floor are primary archives. So there's a wealth of information there, and from visual to historical to archival to reference to staying late for one of our programs, there's something for you.
It's so great to hear all that, because I think, you know, hopefully for you all listening, when you originally think of archives, I think it's easy to think of just books. And while there are certainly books, as we talk, you know, both of our collections house, like you said, a number of photographs, both digital and physical, and letters, you know, I mentioned emails earlier, you know, all kinds of different forms of media, which I think is really incredible and accessible, right? Like accessible. Yeah. And, you know, I work at a library that has over 129 million items, and our our third and fourth floor, just like you, are archival shelves. So we have over 60 miles of archival shelves. Whoa. And you can imagine, like, it's a lot of stuff. And newspapers are, like, I always tell people, like, if you're researching something, newspapers are such an incredible window into the past. So It's just cool to hear you talk about all your different collections too.
Oh yeah, speaking of serials and newspapers, we actually have, thanks to ProQuest, our ProQuest historical Black newspapers, which were completely digitalized. So patrons don't have to specifically come to our library. They have access to some of the greatest Black publications online. So the power of digitalization is Literally just boom, right there.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, that's the thing is, like, as you and I talk about the archives we work at, but All of this stuff is accessible, like a lot of it. Not everything is digitized, But there's a lot that is. So, like, if you are doing research, or let's say that you want to write a book, right? Like, there's so much to be found, so much inspiration to be found. We've had writing workshops at our institution, and like, there's a lot of people that come in and look at the archives for both nonfiction writing and fiction writing and poetry, right? So there's just a lot to do.
I must ask, so what is your most memorable experience at your institution in Virginia?
Oh my God. Well, I can tell you my most life-changing one.
Yes, yeah.
So I, like I mentioned, I specifically look at Asian immigrants and Asian Americans in the state of Virginia and the history there. And my master's thesis in history was specifically on Japanese immigrants and Japanese Americans in Virginia during Jim Crow segregation through Japanese incarceration.
Oh, wow.
So there were Japanese immigrants from Virginia that were taken to incarceration camps during World War II, which is often seen as a West Coast piece, but there is certainly People in the South that were affected. And as I was doing this research, when I first did you have to do a prospectus for a master's thesis in history. And it's usually like a 25-page, like, how I'm going to do this, what resources I'm going to look at. And when I first turned it in, they basically were like, you're never going to find enough. And I was like, no, I will. I will.
I know. I was like, thanks for the encouragement, you know?
Yeah, I could do it.
Them wrong.
Exactly. And so one of the pieces, I ended up redoing my prospectus. It ended up being almost twice as long. It was like 40 pages. And one of the people that convinced them is that I found this story in the newspaper of a man, Tsuruju Miyazaki, who was sent to a camp from Norfolk, Virginia. And so that was like a piece that helped convince them to let me write my thesis. I wrote my thesis, graduated, you know, I did write it. I did it.
Brilliantly. Yes. Showed them.
And then like a year after I the year I graduated, I was working downstairs and a woman came in and was asking what kind of records we might have had on Japanese immigrants in Virginia.
Oh my God.
And my boss overheard her asking this and was like, oh my God, we just had someone who's like just graduated, did her thesis on this. Let me go get her. And so he brings me downstairs and I met her. She's a very good friend of mine to this day. Her name's Regina Boone. And she has explored the story of her grandfather who was incarcerated, Tsuruju Miyazaki, and her story. And she is the son of Raymond Boone, who was the creator of a Black-owned, Black-run newspaper here in Richmond, which still runs. And so it was her father that told her to find out more about his father. And I definitely encourage you all to check out her story. It's really powerful. She actually has a documentary on, it's called NHK Japan. And it's about her exploring her grandfather's story. And she travels a number of different places, but it was just incredible because I met her like right at the beginning and we've actually done talks together and like we, you know, we're still in touch to this day, but her story is a really important one because it's a Black Asian American story of not just a Virginia, you know, person, but, you know, it's a Southern history, it's Virginia history, it's American history. So I definitely encourage, sorry, it's a little bit of a side, but like I met her because I worked at the library and that's been such an important friendship to me. So.
Oh my gosh. I'm trying to fight back tears. Talk about serendipity. And like, had you not had continue with your passion and just, wow, serendipity. The fact that you kept going, you're able to help her with her family and complete a history that she was exploring. Wow. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
She's done it all. She's incredible. And she's a photojournalist too. So like, I definitely Ooh. Tell people to check out her story, because she tells her own story and it's an important one.
Wow. Oh my goodness. Talk about serendipity. Wow.
Yeah. I think the most goosebumpy moment for me was when she said everywhere in her journey she had seen cranes, like the bird. And I was like, whoa, I have a crane tattoo on my back. And I was like, it was just like, oh my God, this is wild.
I love your tattoos.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you do as well. Do you want to tell us about, sorry, a little side, but do you want to tell us about your book tattoo?
I'll go first, but you also have to finish. You have some great pieces. And I'm not as tight as you, which I wish. So I love Charles Bukowski. Although he is considered a grumpy old misogynist man, it is his craftsmanship of sarcasm that many people overlook. It's the sarcasm, people. It's the sarcasm. I'm a Bukowski. And his poem, The Bluebird, which talks about the inner child and how conversations with the inner child feed and help to reparent that child, but similar to them to a bluebird in a cage, I know why you're there, which is a line that he utilizes in a sense to reference Maya Angelou, I know why the caged bird sings, which is so funny because many people don't perceive him to be or to utilize certain feminist imagery or references. But I have a bluebird on my left arm, which is in honor of the Bluebird poem, which is in honor of the inner child within. No matter what you do, you always feed it with your conversations. I have a second tattoo, which is purple gardenia. Gardenias are my favorite flower. And then I have a green anchor. But most importantly, what do you have?
Oh my God. Well, I think it's hard to beat it. If you guys could see Forrest's tattoo, it is beautiful. I got to see it earlier. And like, I also have book tats. Maybe it's a piece of working in a library. You just have to have book tats.
A rite of passage. Yes. A rite of passage.
I've definitely got some Hobbit tattoos, Lord of the Rings. Yeah. I've got Redwall, which is a young adult or kind of a kid series, actually, about a bunch of animals in the forest. And I've got Peter Rabbit, a purple crayon. I've got a stack of books. I got Narnia.
You said a purple crayon?
Yeah, from Harold and the Purple Crayon. You ever heard of that one?
Have you read The Crayons Are Taking a Break?
Yes. You know, I love it. I feel like when you work in a library, like, you read and are excited about all books, no matter what age they're for.
Oh my goodness. And do you have any other tattoos?
I think other book tats, I've got like Narnia, and then I've got some Star Wars tattoos, which like half count for, I mean, there are Star Wars books. So.
Oh yes. I'm a Darth Sidious or Palpatine.
Okay, Forrest. Okay.
You know, chaotic favorite.
Oh man, that's awesome.
What's your favorite Star Wars character?
Why'd you do this to me? I mean, honestly, like,
good or bad?
Okay, well, most people from Rogue One, because actually I think that's the best Star Wars movie.
Okay.
I love Rogue One. And actually, have you watched Mandalorian yet?
Yes, I have.
I think Mandalorian is very good. I also love Pedro Pascal, so like
okay.
But sorry, that's like not as deep cut. If we're going like old school deep cut, I used to love Jaina Solo, which like there used to be old canon Jason and Jaina, who were the children of Han Solo and Leia. But I think they nixed those canons.
Do you read any fan fiction?
No.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I'm gonna have to send you some. Okay. Yeah. Amazing. Oh my goodness. Okay, wait. I must also ask, do you read any online comics?
No, I don't actually.
Ooh.
Do you have recommendations?
I have a few, like Persephone and some things like that. Oh. I had to slowly transition from audiobooks because having someone else's mind and or having someone else's voice in my head as I recall certain passages is a little creepy to me.
Yeah.
I prefer. So I wanted to transition from audiobooks to visual graphic novels.
Nice.
And so I'll send you some links, but Persephone is a great title, of course, about the goddess or demigod of the underworld that 6 months of the year she's above ground and the other she's with the love of her life. It's a great series. I think you'll love.
Okay, yeah, we'll definitely check it out. Actually, while we're on the topic, Forrest, so what are your favorite books to recommend? I mean, you're in a library, so people ask you stuff all the time, I'm sure.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so first, oh man, it would have to be The Prophets by Robert Jones.
Yeah.
Oh, you've read The Prophets.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, anything by Roxane Gray. I love Audre Lorde, of course. Would have to say Blackbirds in the Sky by Brandy Colbert, which is a new book that's coming out about the Tulsa riots. Oh my goodness, Sonia Sanchez, love her poetry. I definitely have to say The Color of Water by James McBride. Beautiful title, beautiful book. Each chapter is either his narration or his mother, and they complement and complete each chapter of their own journey as a parent and also as a child, and also how she explores certain trauma that she passed on unbeknownst to her because she comes from a silent generation as a Jewish woman, and then she's raising a biracial child in New York. So all these intergenerational stories. But my favorite novel of all time, which I always recommend to anyone, is Sassafras, Cypress, and Indigo by Shenge, simply because it's an intergenerational title about three sisters and a mother, and they all have experienced a trauma, but yet as they converse with each other and also are able to use certain mental health resources, they're able to rehabilitate their lives through their connection with the world. And it also highlights Gullah Geechee history, which is a part of my culture. You know, I'm a Geechee American. And so I enjoy just the illustration of my history and also how they utilize our specific dialect and our language to not only show how we preserve, but how we hide our history in plain sight. So definitely check out Sassafras, Cypress, and Indigo by Shenge. She is also the author of For Colored Girls When the Rainbow Was Not Enough. There's also a male adaptation of that. So definitely just check out the play and also the novel. It's beautiful writing, beautiful.
Okay, sorry, I'm writing all your suggestions down. It's incredible.
No worries, I'll send them also to you.
Yeah. Thank you, Forrest.
Anytime. That's also why I try to provide as many Black and queer people of color literature and archival information on my platform, Favorite Librarian. You know, not only is a library a neutral experience, but you can cultivate a library experience anywhere and on many platforms. And that's something that I've tried to cultivate on my Instagram and on my website, Favorite Librarian. So if you can't find anything here, check out Feminist Book Club or Favorite Librarian.
Yes. And I think that's something that we both feel so similarly, is that education, if you want it, should be available to anyone.
Yes.
No matter what platform, no matter how you access it, you know, it's always good to challenge your brain. And it's always, I know that sometimes I always talk about in like some of my segments, like, I think sometimes it's really intimidating to approach history books and like nonfiction. Yes. And like trying in, and of course it's, you know, sometimes it is more fun to pick up something like a fantasy book, right? Like I want to pick up Legend Morn sometimes and get in a different world. Like I want to pick up Saga Wraiths of Ruin. But I think sometimes it's good to kind of challenge yourself and read nonfiction, even if it's like 5 pages, 10 pages, even if you're watching stuff on Instagram or TikTok, like there's stuff out there.
Yes. One of my guilty pleasures is to reread R.L. Stein's or Flowers for Algernon. That's my favorite. Like when I feel like I'm too desensitized by social media or the world, I'll pick up an R.L. Stein's or Flowers for Algernon. Oh, I love that.
Oh, man. Well, since you said R.L. Stein, I have to ask you, did you watch the Netflix Fear Street movies yet?
I haven't. I've heard mixed reviews and I'm like, if they do him wrong, if they do the series wrong, I'm writing Netflix a letter. I'm writing them a handwritten letter because I am displeased because they have done such a great job with their documentaries, their new version, their 2021 version of the Sailor Moon, which I'm a little salty because it's only 2 episodes, but each episode is 1 hour and 30 minutes long. So I see what you did there, but I don't like what you did there. I see you for your work.
That's awesome.
It's giving me like Cowboy Bebop tease. It's like just enough, but one season's enough. And I'm like, no, the writing is impeccable. Give me more.
Oh man, that's awesome. Well, now that I'm like, my mind's on like movie adaptations, and maybe we can do a different conversation, like, because there's so many book movie adaptations, both fiction and nonfiction, which I think you and I could have a very interesting conversation about some of these nonfiction ones in particular.
Oh my goodness. Okay. To summarize film adaptations, what's your favorite book to film overall, like the greatest book to film that you've ever seen?
I was very impressed with Lord of the Rings. I mean, I loved the Lord of the Rings. I mean, Tolkien, like when he writes, and I love him, but like the way he writes sometimes is he will focus on like a tree for like 10 minutes. And at least in the movie, you're like, oh, that's a nice tree. All right, move along.
Well, you know, he created a universe before he even developed certain character arches, but I feel like he is such like an eulogist. Like he is just so in love with nature. A surrealist.
Does. Really a loves surrealist. It. Really yes. loves it.
Surrealism at its highest. Oh my goodness. So yes, Lord of the Rings is a beautiful. Oh my God. They're so long though. Like.
Yeah. And you got to watch the extended. I mean, you get.
Well, you have time. Like, oh, you got time. Ooh, you know, as long as you have the snacks, I'm down.
Yep.
Gluten-free snacks, though. Because you know,
okay. My easy. Life is done. What about you, Boris? What's your top?
I would have to say Beloved, simply because like, the complexity of Beloved and also the spiritual imagery and the possession and also how, again, I love intergenerational. So we get to see and ancestry speaking through the present day and then the adoption of a strange woman. It's just beautiful and how family is not always biological, especially in people of color community, and also how we adopt certain members of our family and they become a part of our intermediate family. It's just I was like, and plus that's possibly and the Women of Brewster's Place, also both produced by Oprah Winfrey, which is something that many people don't really interpret. Oprah Winfrey, when she produces certain book to film adaptations, it is literally verbatim. So if you are not a part of Oprah's book club, please, friend, what are you doing with your time? Like, join, friend. Please join. Like she's doing the work of like the Lord and our ancestors, and she's doing amazing.
I want to ask you actually, now as you're talking about that, have you checked out the graphic novel Displacement by Kiku Hughes?
No, but it's on my to read list. Have you read it?
Yeah, it's like my number one recommended. Like I always recommend it to folks. It's beautifully drawn and it's a really interesting, like going back in time to the incarceration camps, plus like kind of a queer reimagination. It's by a queer author and her families had been in the camps. So she like talked to them about it and it's very like kindred-y, like it goes back in time and it's really good. So I definitely recommend that one to you.
Thank you for that. Okay, I'll definitely check that out. Especially since you said it reminds you of Kindred. Yes, shout out to Butler. Yes. Oh my goodness. You have a great reading fluency and appetite over there. I can imagine. It sounds like you read possibly like a novel a week. Like, you're on it.
I definitely try. I just hit my 110th book. 111th book this morning, which was Sylvia Moreno Garcia's Velvet Was the Night. Ooh. The Latinx author who also wrote Mexican Gothic.
It's like a noir.
It was great. Yeah, thank you. I got back from a beach vacation, so I was doing a lot of reading there.
Self-care, self-love.
Yes.
Rest is revolutionary.
Yes.
Yes. rest up. And I'm like, yes. Oh my gosh. I can't wait to hear about your review of it. If you post it.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. I love that. Like, as we talk too, because I say the same to you, Forrest. It's like, you read everything too. And it's like incredible. Like, I feel like it lends itself so much to working in a library too, because you can really personalize like to people like, hey, have you checked this out? Or if you liked this, like you should check this out. And it's just awesome. And it like intertwines with movies, right? Like movies, anime, like books, they're all the worlds that we want to read.
Yes. You know what? It's just right now, unfortunately, everyone loves to talk about film, books, and movies. But the one thing I wish folks were open to do is play board games again at the library. No one wants to play board games because of COVID. I'm like, friends, let's play chess or life.
Yes, that's amazing. I love that so much. I definitely will be visiting your library with that board game collection. That's incredible.
Oh my gosh. Like, you can only imagine some of the old school games. I'm like, let's play. Hey, they're like, no, I'm okay. Germs. I'm like,
okay. Yeah. I know. I was so sad. Like, one of the programs I started right before COVID was that I called it Civic Conversations. And it was basically watching like 20 minutes of a documentary together. So like, for example, one of them was a part of Freedom Riders, and then having a conversation about activism and nonviolent activism versus violence and or versus like, you know, not just different kinds of protesting and activism. And I, like you said, a lot of times, like, libraries are these spaces where you can have a lot of different opinions and a lot of different people's viewpoints and have a conversation about that. And we are able to provide historical context and historical knowledge to really have a basis in that. And I was so sad because we had just started that and we had these great conversations with folks, and then COVID. I know. Which those don't really lend themselves to be, I mean, you could probably do them online, but they're not easy conversations. And so we did not try to do them online.
Oh no, but I'm so glad that you were able to just cultivate that space, possibly now that, or tentatively now that the world is opening up. That's knock on wood. Let's hope we stay open. safely, you know.
Yes,
hope that you're able to begin meeting in person so you can still have those civic conversations. That sounds like such a great and a creative idea, just to get the minds going and to start conversation about specific subjects that those may not be open to privately, but now publicly you're creating that, just that comfortable vulnerability to just be shared. That's beautiful. Well,
thank you. And like, the beauty of both of the places we work is like, we can make those historical recommendations, right? Like, someone says, hey, I want to learn more about this. Well, we can tell you 6 books and 6 personal papers to look at. And
you're right.
This, 6 newspapers and like all these different resources. So I think that's just incredible, that the work that you've been doing as well, and just getting that information out to people. Like, honestly, if you're not following Forrest right now, what are you doing? Like,
and you, Emma, and for yourself, Emma, you do some great work as well. I'm excited to also explore some of your suggestions. And like I said, you got some great reading. You have a great reading appetite. So I'm sure, like, during your vacation, you were like turning page after page. Definitely have to mention to me some, or share with me some of your anime suggestions as well, because I'm definitely open to some of them, you know.
Yeah, so I am a My Hero Academia fan. I'm a big fan of Aizawa. He's just this like sleepy professor in the show that is always in his sleeping bag. He like always is like, and I used to be a professor, so like I'm like, oh my god, sleepy professor. Yes. I've been watching this show called Black Clover lately, though, which is it's a little fluffy, but it's still fun. It's like
fluffy.
Yeah, like, you know, it's not anything like Attack on Titan deep, but it's it's still very light and fun. Mm. Yeah, and like, you know, you already said one of the best ones, Cowboy Bebop. And you know, Miyazaki, anything Miyazaki is like Spirited Away, Ponyo.
Spirited Away. Oh, be still my beating heart. What about like Gundam or Gundam Z? Do you like
Gundam? I have not watched Gundam yet, so it's on the list. It's on the list.
Crunchyroll, you will love it.
Oh, and I forgot to say that my favorite one is Demon Slayer.
Oh,
I love Demon Slayer.
Okay.
Demon Slayer is great. And then I also rewatched Akira last year, and rewatching it in like in 2020. Well, that was 2020, but like 2021 is a different experience. So if you have not watched Akira yet, then woo.
Wow, you got some great choices. Oh my God.
What about you, Forrest? You got to tell me.
Oh, so for me, I'm definitely old school. Shout out to Toonami. So I love Tenchi Muyu, preferably Tenchi Muyu in Tokyo. That's my favorite series, a part of the franchise. Definitely love Cowboy Bebop, one of my favorites because of their inclusion of people of color. Plus, you know, coffee is pretty badass, you know. Definitely. Oh my goodness. I said Inuyasha, which is also, that's my favorite anime outside of One Punch Man, my favorite teacher.
Ooh, Saitama, yes.
What else? I did say Gundam. Gundam Z is also my favorite. I love how the brothers are just constantly just, I love the relationship with the brothers. But yes, and of course, Dragon Ball Z Kai, because Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z, but Dragon Ball Z Kai is the best. Gotta go with the original.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So many good suggestions. I have such a long list right now of all of the things that you have suggested. So thank you for it.
We'll have to have like a book club like meeting virtual. Like again, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Please do.
We need like a comic book club too, where like we discuss comics.
Yeah, I read a lot of single issue comics. So like I've been reading, well, Saga's over now, but I read Saga, and then like you talked a little bit about Persephone earlier, and it reminded me of this single issue called The Wicked and the Divine, which is super dope. I read a lot of indie comics mostly. So a lot of Dark Horse.
See, I'm a DC comic. I love DC. I am an Aquaman historian. I love Arthur Miller. It's all about heritage. I love how he decides and chooses to be a hero based upon preserving his history. And although he's the most like talked down and overlooked superhero, it's because many people do not value his strengths and powers. And like, if we think about it, 70% of the earth is covered in water. He protects 70% of the earth, like scientifically proven, you know, plausibly illustrated.
Oh man, that's awesome. Okay, yes. I literally have written down so many things.
But the thing is, and I'll just say this to be my last thing, I like overshare, although I love Aquaman, I am on the flat earther side, so I am a flat earther. So I know many people are like, but you read. I'm like, yes, but friend, there are certain things, there's certain theories.
Oh man, Forrest.
I actually go to flat earther conventions for all those out there. Wow. You are seen and heard. You are seen and heard.
Hey man, I appreciate you sharing that with me. Live your truth.
You'll be surprised. Most people, they're like, they take me serious, and then they're like, oh, she's a flat earther. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, as long as she's registered to vote, we're cool. I'm like, yeah, okay. I'm still good, though. Still a good person.
I know that's true, because I've already talked to you today, and I know that's true, so that's good.
Yeah. Thank you, Emma. Oh,
well, I think we're probably, man, I could literally talk to you like all day. So I'm sensing maybe a part two, but I think for now, maybe we're hitting a time. We are both Pisces, if you guys can't tell. So we kind of splashed around to a lot of different topics.
Ooh, love what you did there. Love what you did there.
But seriously, like, you guys should reach out to us and let us know like what you think about libraries. And have you been to any archives? And you know, what was that experience for you? And I do want to ask you one other thing that I think about a lot in my institution is, you know, what would you like to see changed in libraries? And maybe that's specific to archives too. Like, maybe that's a double question.
I would love to see the same inclusion on the shelves, also in the staffing. You know, I believe those, you know, representations not only in the collection, but also those that maintain the collection. And it's important that when you are seen and heard, it's not only through the work or the resources that you are utilizing or trying to gain access to, but also in the stories that are resonating and those that can help you to also discover, not see what also is there, similar to your experience that you shared with us of such a defining moment of serendipity and the power of keeping or moving forward with your passions. Had you not, you would not have been able to just provide not only a friend of yours to this day, but a patron that was truly trying to explore themselves and their history. So it's important that you are your authentic self, and that all that authenticity and authentic representation is needed. So I would look for more inclusion and more representation in the library field and in the history sector.
Oh, that's like so perfectly put.
This is so great. Oh my, you're wonderful, Emma.
Goosebumps. Like, you are wonderful. Thank you so much for talking to me about
thank you.
Not just libraries, but I love all the recommendations that you have for, oh my gosh, like I said, I have this huge list of anime, of TV shows, of books, of comics. So I'm like super excited.
This is wonderful. I'm definitely gonna like be a hermit today and check out some of these indie comics as I watch like Sailor Moon in the back.
Yes. Well, thank you, Forrest, and thank you all for listening. And hopefully, like I said, maybe Forrest, you and I can have another conversation later down the line.
Yes.
I think you and I could probably talk about a lot of things for a long time. Yeah,
like a series or something.
Yeah. Yes. So thank you all. And like I said, like reach out to us and let us know. Let us know like your thoughts. Like we're here for you guys. Like it's, I can tell even from just talking to you, Forrest, is like we both love talking to people. And that's what we're here for. We're here to make these spaces like open to you all and know that these are for you. These are archives and spaces that you all that listening can use. So yay.
Well, thank you for having me. Until next time, take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
A well-read woman is a